Chapter 4, Central Retinal Artery and Vein Occlusions.
Central retinal artery and central retinal vein occlusions, they are not super common, but before we talk about how they present, what even are we talking about? What is this?
So it's in the name, which I like, central retinal artery occlusion. I'm thinking that one of the arteries to the retina might have got occluded, and that's obviously bad because if you've got no blood, the retina's going to die. Central retinal vein occlusion is the veins that are draining the retina somehow have got kinked and are all backed up, and that can be really bad, and that can also produce vision loss through ischemia because you can't get the blood through there. So it's in the name. It's very simple.
So let's do these side by side. How do they present? Let's just refer to these as CRAO and CRVO because either way they're a mouthful, and that's just slightly less syllables for me. So CRAO is going to present with an acute monocular vision loss. So all of a sudden, you know, everything's fine and then boom, your vision is gone in the affected eye. And this could come back a few minutes later. It might be transient, it might be stuttering, or it might be persistent. Either of those are consistent with CRAO. Now, what about a CRVO? This isn't necessarily that acute onset. It's a little bit more subacute and a little bit more of a gradual visual loss.
Yeah, think of the central retinal artery occlusion like TIAs, just like a little stroke. So it can get better, and then you can completely stroke out and lose your eyeball. So that tends to be pretty sudden, might be recurrent. Whereas the central retinal vein, yeah, a little slower onset. And they talk about ischemic versus non-ischemic, but in either way, if it's there and long enough and bad enough, the vein occlusion can also make you lose your vision.
Another test that may or may not be helpful is the swinging flashlight test. And Mel, remind us all how that works.
So that swinging flashlight test, the afferent pupillary defect thing, is like you shine the light into the unaffected eye. And the normal reaction is that both eyes constrict, right? So that's normal. Then you swing that flashlight over to the affected eye. But because the affected eye can't get that light all the way back to the retina because now it's dead because it's got a vein or an artery occlusion back there, then what happens is that normal constriction is less. And so it starts to dilate because you made it constrict when you're on the normal side through a reflex going in the back way. And then you swing it over to the affected eye and that light is not causing pupillary constriction when you put the light in directly. So it actually looks like it's dilating. So that's the affected eye. That's an afferent pupillary defect.
And whether it's a CRAO or a CRVO, you may or may not have an afferent pupillary defect. So it helps build the case, but it doesn't have to be there. With both of them, your visual acuity is going to be affected. And both of these tend to happen in patients who have vascular disease and are prone to strokes as well.
The population that gets these are generally older. They're generally vascular paths. Diabetics. They are super, I find, hard to diagnose because they really kind of require A, high suspicion, but B, good fundoscopic exam skills.
Now on fundoscopy, this is really important because I'm probably going to get yelled at by somebody who really knows ultrasound, but ultrasound is not as useful for this as it is for looking at the vitreous and looking at the retina. So what do we see on fundoscopy?
Well, first of all, you should do fundoscopy and you should actually dilate the patient's eye to do this test. If you're worried at all about precipitating an acute angle closure glaucoma, well, first of all, you're doing it in the wrong patient because this should be someone with painless vision loss, not painful vision loss. And you can also do that little trick where you take the slit beam and you put it right at the limbus. And if those two beams, the one shining on the cornea and the one shining on the iris, if there's a gap between them, then you know that the angle is wide. You know that they have a deep anterior chamber because the light has had some room to refract. But if those two slit beams are basically right on top of each other, then you assume a narrow angle and a really flat anterior chamber. So if you're ever worried about doing an eye dilation, you could just do that quick test and make sure that it's safe to dilate the eye. And it usually is going to be safe. And if you do cause an acute angle closure glaucoma, well, they're in the ER, so they're in the best possible place for it.
So the fundoscopy, the central retinal artery occlusion classically is a pale retina because you've got this, you know, infarction occurring of the retina. There's not blood getting there, but with a cherry red spot in the macula. And the reason for that is that the macula usually has a blood supply that is separate. So it looks really red and everything else looks pale. Whereas in the central retinal vein occlusion, Jess, what do you get?
So this is vascular congestion. So this is the classic blood and thunder fundus. You have retinal hemorrhages, and then you have tortuous veins and a whole bunch of venous congestion. So how do we treat these?
Treatment.
Well, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to call ophthalmology, because beyond that, to be honest, there's not a lot that we can do to treat these. There's a little bit of stuff you could do, but it's a little fringe and not very well based in evidence. But Mel, tell me about ocular massage.
And the classic thing with ocular massage, the idea is that you sort of massage the eyeball, which takes the pressure up and down, maybe dislodges that little tiny clot that's in that little tiny artery, and maybe that will help. So that's been described. We don't really know if it works, but there's a whole bunch of other things like ocular paracentesis. You stick a needle in their eyeball, you'll suck some of that fluid out to try and drop the pressure so it'll reperfuse. I'm not going to do
that. Oh, yeah. I do that all the time. You've never done that, Mel?
No, I don't.
I love stabbing people in the eye.
There's even stuff that would make sense, like intra-arterial TPA, because it's a little clot and it's like a little stroke, so maybe we should treat it that way. And there is some non-randomized evidence that it works, but then there was one randomized study that actually got stopped because they said it doesn't appear to be working, and every now and then we make somebody bleed badly into their eyeball. So, and there's other things, calcium channel blockers and all this stuff, but none of it's proven. And so this is why we say just like consult ophthalmology and just say, want us to try something before we send them to you?
I think the ocular massage thing is interesting because it's actually not the pressure that you're pushing down on the eye that's going to help. It's the release of that pressure. So you're kind of pushing down and then releasing up. That's when it should get dislodged, which is sort of the theory behind ocular paracentesis, that you're sort of deflating or decreasing the pressure in the eye. Or maybe you're using an ocular antihypertensive and hoping that that's going to dislodge the clot. But really, I am not going to bank on that. I am going to be calling my ophthalmologist.
So in terms of central retinal vein occlusion, there's even less evidence to know what to do. So again, it's maybe aspirin and call the ophthalmologist because we really don't know. That's even more difficult to deal with.
And these are really hard. I mean, when it comes to the history, there's so much overlap. Maybe you might get some clues, but then you do the exam and it's really, really hard. I mean, you got to do a great fundoscopic exam. So it's just a very difficult diagnosis to make.
If you do a really good fundoscopic exam, you should be able to pick up the Hollandhorst plaques, Jess.
The what?
You should be able to pick those up. Hollandhorst plaques? I'm sure you've seen these all the time. These are cholesterol crystals at branch arterioles, which you can see with fundoscopy, particularly if you put a little pressure on the eye, you can see them moving. And I say they should be called Hollandhorst because nobody can see these. Are you kidding me?
So what am I supposed to do? Is a dilated fundoscopy exam as I'm squishing their eyeball with my finger?
To look for tiny little branch arterial crystals?
No!
If you can do that, you are probably not in the emergency department with our equipment. You are probably an ophthalmologist with lots of magnification and more skills than we'll ever have.
Remember, again, we're doing full neurologic exams for all of these patients because you could have something else worse going on that could mimic these symptoms. For example, carotid dissection, where you could get some vision loss, and I certainly wouldn't want to miss that. So, and then the test that the ophthalmologist may order or ask you to order is a fluorescein angiography study. I've never ordered that, to be honest.
Either have I. Good luck with that.
But they might ask you to, and then you have to figure out how to actually order it. And then just to be aware, there is this other thing, a branched retinal artery occlusion. So it's not the central retinal artery, it's a branch of the retinal artery. And those patients tend to do a little bit better. They might recover some vision. So it's a slightly better version of a terrible diagnosis.
Fantastic. So we're doing painless monocular loss of vision. And we talked about the retinal detachment, vitreous hemorrhage. And then we just finished talking about sort of the more vascular problems, which are central retinal artery and central retinal vein occlusion, and they're more diagnosed with fundoscopy than ultrasoundy.
Big Stu Little Reviews.
Hi there again, it's Stu. You know, we talk about some of these entities like central retinal artery occlusion, central retinal vein occlusion, and then of course there's the partial varieties of both of those, stroke and TIA, which is also called amaurosis fugax. We differentiate between all of these things because they are different things, but again, they all really are manifestations of vascular events in the central nervous system. The eyes, the optic nerve, are really just extensions of the CNS. And as such, I take them all very seriously. And I think of them in not just an ophthalmological way, but in a neurologic way. So regardless of which one of these ones you're dealing with, your opto might be your first go-to person, but don't forget the full neurologic workup. If they're having a vascular event in one part of their CNS, they're probably at risk and possibly also having one in another part of their CNS. And so I'm pretty liberal in my workup and my consultations on these patients because they're pretty rare, once again, and pretty life-changing. And because the field is changing rapidly, there might be therapies coming down the pike that apply to some of these ophthalmic presentations of these neurologic emergencies.